Welcome back to the podcast. You know, today we've got Gary Pageot. You know, he's literally a leading expert in the photographic world. You know, as the world is changing dramatically, we went from chemical process to a digital process. Now we're going to an AI process. Gary and his team have really developed and really are in the top of class where it comes to these ideas. And we're going to talk a lot about how that's going, what the ethics are. I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. If you're a photographer or if you're in the digital world or in a creative world, this is one of those conversations that's kind of interesting and mind-bending to kind of forecast where the world's going and some ideas. Gary, I'm excited to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Anthony. Great to be here. Very excited to talk about AI, as it is the hot topic in the photography world these days. And of course, the photography world, you know, that word changes all the time right now.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask you, as you know, there are some photographers who have earned their right to hold that camera. I mean the 10,000 hours of pictures they've taken, the thousands and thousands of pictures they've thrown away, and they've earned their right to get here. Now all of a sudden you got this AI thing coming in and they're like, whoa.
Well, you know, the reality is the person who's earned that right to call themselves a photographer, the person who's put that 10,000 hours, is going to learn how to use AI to improve their work. It's in some ways, it's not much different than what changed with Photoshop back when in the late 1980s and 90s when it was introduced. You know, Photoshop changed a lot of things. I was at a conference in 1992 for news photographers, and they were really talking about back then the ethics of Photoshop. This was the National Newspaper Press Photographers Association, and they were talking about what can you do in Photoshop. And back then they were saying you can only do the things you could do in a darkroom. You can't do anything else. You can't remove distractions. You can't really change the things. And, you know, that kind of changed and morphed over time, right? And so now what you're going to have with AI is with the prompts, with generative AI, where you can type in text and you can create an image, the person who's going to know how to do that most effectively is a person with visual training, like a photographer.
So, I guess you're saying having that photography background, right, gives you the ability to have an eye, or not only that, be able to accurately describe what you want the AI to develop. So let's give some examples. So if you're able to go into, let's use one of the platforms that you're using right now.
Yeah. Diffusion or one of those. Yep.
So you go into Diffusion.
So you would go in and, you know, you want to create a text prompt of, you know, say a unicorn jumping over a mountain, right? Well, if you're an experienced photographer, you have already been tagging your images already, right? Now, AI has been helping with some of that, but you've already been figuring out, okay, how do I describe this image? You know, what's the color? What's the context? What's the mood? What are the colors? What's the situation? You've built all that in a text form to help describe the image, so that when someone puts it in a database, they can find it. And so they're already teaching that to photographers, right? That it's not just going snapping a picture of a news event. You've got to put it in context. You've got to describe, you know, what is happening in there. And those are skills you can translate to AI. So if you want to create an image now, what's happening with the ethics side of it is, of course, there's two things that are problematic with AI right now. One is the databases that AIs are being trained on, because in many cases, people have not opted in to allow their work to be trained, right? Because that's how an AI works. It looks at a giant database and it learns, you know, it sees patterns and then learns from that. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, your photos you've been posting on social media may have been trained on an AI. So there's some ethics issues there. So there's a lot of work being done behind the scenes
Go back. So you're saying, hey, AI's using the large language model, right? The model that's out there that's taking all of this, millions and millions and millions of pictures, right? And where is that data coming from? Is that what we're saying? It's being trained on illegal material?
Well, not necessarily illegal, but people have not opted in. I mean, legality these days in the world of the internet is a little bit of a, you know, questionable thing, right? If people put it online, it may have been in the terms of service down in the thing that people check that we may use this for other purposes, and no one ever read it.
But no one ever reads that. Do you ever read that? Do you ever read that whole thing?
No one ever reads that. No one ever reads that. But so you may have opted in, but you didn't know it was being used this way, right? And so it's sort of like what happens when pictures are being used in stock photography and they're being used for purposes other than what the photographer wanted, right? For it may have been used in an ad. Like you see that, you used to see this all the time where people would post things on social media and then end up on a bus stop illustration somewhere because it was just a cool image and somebody took it. So that's the other, the piece of it is the AI being trained on, you know, an ethical database. And again, there's a lot of people doing work on that, trying to kind of corral that in. And there's a lot of partnerships that are being had, you know, a lot of the stock photo agencies are getting involved saying, hey, we'll make our stuff available for training for a fee, for example. The second piece of AI is when something is being produced and it's not being labeled as an illustration, right? Like there's no word right now for what a generative AI image means. And by generative AI, I mean an image that is not, that does not exist prior to being created by the AI. It's not like a composition. For people who don't know, it's not like a composition where you're taking bits and pieces from other images and putting them together. Generative means it's creating it out of whole cloth, basically creating it out of bits that the computer decides what it's going to look like. And so, you know, so you can create totally fictional events using AI, and depending on your skill at it and how you manipulate the image afterwards, you can make it look completely realistic. And we're seeing it in news feeds these days. We're seeing it definitely on social media, right? And so how do you determine, how do you label that, right?
In the news and who owns it? I mean, does the AI own it? Does the owner of the AI own it? I mean,
no one owns it.
You know, whenever it was created by a photographer, right? You know, Bob could say, hey, I took this picture, this is mine. Right. Or Betty could say, I took this picture, it's mine. And, you know, you can use it for this article. And I got paid for this article to use it. Exactly. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'll get an email later on somewhere. I clipped something off the internet somewhere and I'll get an email from someone say, hey, you use my picture. And I'm always like, what? Why? I mean, out of a million things, I don't know, first of all, how they figure that out. But number two, I can see how I would owe that person some money, but now all of a sudden, if this gets generated and created, you know, it's not by something, but the concern becomes what was used to create the creation.
Right. Well, there's two concerns here. You said exactly what was used to create the creation, right? Was that an ethical database? And then, like you said, who owns it? Now, a federal judge has already determined a generative AI image is owned by nobody, because a computer doesn't have legal rights. So if you create a generative AI image and you post it, you don't even own it.
So you
can't claim copyright on it.
So if it's out there, if it's out in the world, I have the right to go and use a generative AI photograph, no matter where it's at.
Because, I mean, technically speaking, again, it's all legally hasn't been worked out yet. But the reality is a federal judge has already determined that because a computer is not a human being, it cannot own a copyright.
Wow. So you create this image with your generative AI, right? Mm-hmm. Now you put it out there. Other people take it. They have the right to use it. You know, audience, I'd love to get some of that feedback from you guys, but have you had that experience? Have you guys put that down in the comments down below? Have you gone through a scenario where someone's taken your generative AI and reused it, and you're like, hey, I mean, what's the production for that?
Well, and where it's going to really change a lot of things, right, is a lot of commercial photography, not necessarily news photography, right? But you can have, right now there's AI that will, let's say you do a photo shoot and you have someone standing next to, and they're wearing, modeling a t-shirt, and they're a certain race and a certain age. You can go in with an AI and change that person's race and age and even gender to match whatever you want without having to reshoot the image again. So, and again, so let's say, for example, you're looking for hats, and, you know, the shopping bot you're using knows that, you know, kind of what your preferences are. And it knows that you prefer to look, shop for hats for people that look like you. So it could even, you know, show people that look like you, maybe not you specifically, that's probably down the road, but that's coming. And then it will show you hats that are, you know, let's say you're a Caucasian male, it'll show you hats on a Caucasian male And then but if you're an African-American, it'll show you an African-American and it'll generate that on the fly as you're doing the search. And it'll look completely realistic. That's out there right now. That's happening right now. People have the technology to do that at this moment. So for those type of things where you're trying to optimize a shopping experience and create content on the fly to get people to click and buy something, that is totally going to be driven by AI.
Well, the really big, beautiful thought there, and maybe the complicated thought, is to really start to think about how, you know, how all of a sudden AI starts to know me better than I know myself. Right. Sure. As it starts to know me that well, right. Sure. All of a sudden it starts to maybe you could call it sales, or some might call it manipulate me by, you know, showing hats of people that look like me and things, doing things I'd love to do. And it starts to know me so well, it knows what I think is successful. So it's wearing that hat in a place that I think is successful. Right. And it starts to, you know, dial me in, right? Starts to move me into, right? I think that idea is kind of a crazy one, right? Before, you know, if you had a hat, you had to market, that one picture had to sell to 100% of the marketplace. Now, today, with AI, as it gets to know me, it can adapt that hat marketing to me specifically, right? That becomes less of a shotgun approach. I mean, Gary, now all of a sudden I'm getting rifled at. Right.
It could even be more more specific than that. Let's say, for example, you're putting into a shopping bot that you want to buy a hat. We'll stay on the hats just because we all know what hats are. And so you said, you know, I'm really looking for a, you know, I'm a Detroit Lions fan. I'm looking for a Detroit Lions hat. I want a blue bill with the Honolulu blue. And I want, you know, these colors. I want this logo. And I want to, then it's going to show me that image that may not even exist yet, but it's going to create a model, and I may have created that hat. And then I say buy, and it's that hat is made for me.
Yeah.
Right. It's actually created in the factory with that personalized design. And then it's shipped to me. And that hat didn't exist anywhere on a warehouse floor. It was just, you know, I had these options I chose for them, and they assembled a hat like that. I mean, that technology is happening right now in photography, right? So you know, that's where I think people are going to really see the benefits of AI. Now, some people might think that's creepy. That's a valid concern. Some people might think that I'm getting what I want at a reasonable price, because the reason why you can offer that reasonably is that, you know, if any of your, listeners are retailers or people, you know, storing stuff in a warehouse costs money. If you can make anything on demand,
that's right.
You're better off.
I mean, the worst part for retail is they have to guess what's going to be in style next season. They have to buy it in advance. They have to front all the money to buy it. And then they have to hope they sell 100% of it before it gets lost, damaged, or stolen by their employees.
Right, exactly.
It's a terrible business. I mean, it's a really tough business to be in.
It's changing rapidly, is what's happening. Yeah. And so, but I mean, you're going to see this in a lot of different ways, I think, coming up in Hollywood. Like now that they've settled the strikes, for example, you're going to have with the actors being able to license their own likenesses back to the studios and things like that. So you're going to, it won't be too far down the road, I don't think, where you're going to be watching Netflix and you're watching an action movie and you're kind of the anti-hero type. And so the ending of the movie, because it knows you, will be created based on what the ending you prefer as that type of viewer. If you're more of a romantic hero type, maybe there's a different ending, a slightly different ending, right? So, you know, I think that's where it's going to lead to, almost a choose your own adventure thing.
I remember when you were a kid. When I was a kid, you'd kind of fill in the words and, you know, you read one way that it would turn the page this way, turn it right. Those were kind of fun. It had multiple endings at the end. This becomes a whole nother level of it. You know, but I think Hollywood, they were fighting. A big part of that whole strike was understanding the rights of, you know, the human and their likeness, right? I mean, should an AI be able to take my likeness and, you know, and apply it to a self-generated idea? Mm-hmm. Like if it, you know, should it be able to say, hey, you know, create an image of someone wearing a hat that looks kind of like Anthony, but not Anthony, but someone that looks kind of like Anthony and his body style, his look, and should it be able to use me as part of that? Or am I getting too sensitive? Am I getting too much like, all right, you can't even use my likeliness. I mean, you can't use me as a structure. Does that become, are we going too far then?
Well, I think the reality is there's going to be both. There's going to be people who will not want to opt in, right? These are the people who aren't on social media, who there's a lot of people not on social media. Even, you know, someone like me who lives on social media, you know, I see it all the time, but reality is most people aren't on Twitter or what have you, or TikTok or whatever. So there's going to be a lot of people who are not going to opt in. Other people will. And they're going to want to, eventually it's going to be where you can be the star of that action movie, right? And you can decide, I'm going to be the hero. I'm going to be the villain. I'm going to be the love interest. I'm going to be the whatever. And, you know, so if you want to be, you know, in Die Hard and you want to be the Bruce Willis character, you can be that character and it'll all be licensed and approved and, you know, or, you know, you want to be Argyle, the driver instead. Right.
And maybe I know I got to feel like I'd be more like the cop eating Twinkies. Right. I think I'll be more like the cop eating Twinkies.
There you go.
Because I think that seems like the role.
Reginald Van Johnson, for those of you who are going to put that in the comments. So
there you go.
So, but, you know, that's where I think, you know, the studios want that to go because A, it's going to increase engagement because as we all know with entertainment right now, it's very, very difficult to get people to spend money for content now. You know, streaming's down, studios are down, you know, things like that. It's just very, very difficult. So you can either retell, you know, fairy tales for the 15th time with a slight twist to make it more modern, or you can just create a series almost like video games where people want to see a story being told, but they want more involvement in the story. Because I just think that's the way our culture is going. People are expecting things to be more personalized for them. And they're expecting things to cater to their needs in addition to doing whatever it is it's going to do. That's just how retail, the culture, entertainment, and all that stuff's moving towards.
Well, I mean, and as it starts to really continue to flip through those things. I mean, there may be a time, I mean, for example, like I may not want, if my, you know, I've got a daughter who's on social media, she's got her own, you know, Instagram, and she's 10, right? She's an actress. She's a dancer. She's a, you know, a model. And, right. You know, she's got a lot, there's lots and lots of pictures out there, right? As a father, I do not want somebody taking that. I mean, the pictures we put out there of her, great. That's, you know, we approve and put them out there. But all of a sudden, if someone comes in and goes, well, I'm going to take it and I'm going to use that, use his daughter's images to go create something else. And all of a sudden I see her in something else. Right. And I think that's ultimately one of the things we got to look at. I mean, for hundreds of thousands of years, we could say, you know, there's always been this sense of you can't forge things, right? I mean, you know, for example, the money supply. We trusted in the money supply because we knew that if you forged something, I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, I remember photocopying, you know, a $10 bill, and I thought I was rich. I'm like, look, I got, my mom's like, dude, no, go put that away. Go put that away because you're gonna get in trouble, right. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we trust in our money supply, right? There's a real sense of, you know, maybe every once in a while you hear some wild story about someone bank, but what they go to federal prison for 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. And that forced us to, or for years. I mean, I'm not sure what the time, but they go for years. I mean, we knew that you forge money, you get caught, you go to jail. There's no messing around with it. Today, as AI can forge things, there's got to be, we've got to create, that's got to be something, or we're gonna break down the fabric of trust between us and the internet. Right. Once we start to not trust that, you know, that's my like.
Well, you already shouldn't trust the internet. I mean, that's just the reality in terms of like, I mean, you know, again, going back to this conference in 92 that I was talking about, where people were talking about Photoshop. Right. And a lot of the discussion back then was, you know, journalism ethics and things like that. And again, this was 1992 when things were, I think, in terms of journalism ethics, a whole lot cleaner than they are now. And that's a whole nother discussion, but it's centered on what, you know, how are you telling the story? But the reality is photographers manipulate content all the time, and whether they actually change the image or not. For example, let's say the photographer's covering a political rally and they like the candidate personally. So they may shoot from a lower angle to make the candidate look more heroic. If they don't like the candidate, they may shoot it from a little higher to make them look dumpier. They may, how they can manage how they show the crowd, right? They can shoot it tight. If there's 100, if there's 15 people there, they can shoot it tight to make it look like there's 50. If they or they can step back and show there's only 15 people there. So there's already a bias built in. But back then there was more of a trust that at least they were going, that there was going to be, you know, some sort of guardrails involved. Now I think, you know, because people have had 30 some years of Photoshop to experience, and a lot of people now can image edit on their phone, what used to take a pro to do, right? You can take people out of images, you can do all kinds of on your phone. It's crazy. So I don't think the expectation is actually there that what I'm seeing online is actually real. And I think people should just be understand that A, be skeptical and confirm everything, right? I mean, so I think AI is certainly going to build upon that, especially in news. Now, what's interesting is, for example, in photography, Leica, which is, you know, a high, very high-end camera manufacturer, right? And they have a new camera out, a digital camera that comes out, and they're, and it's the first camera with a standard built in that basically verifies the copyright and the thing. So basically what it does, it writes inside the digital image that the date, the time, some could be location if they have the app turned on. So you could have date, time, and location, and whether or not the image has been manipulated. And that's hardwired into the image. So you can check that. And that's for journalism purpose. And I think more and more people are going to adopt that sort of thing where maybe, you know, if you see a news photo, there might be a little information button on the bottom and you click on that and it'll tell you all these things. I think that's what's going to have to happen.
You know, I mean, your mind could just explode thinking about the ideas. I mean, just think about from a legal point of view, right? I mean, how much can we trust the photographs that are taken by a police officer, right?
Right.
if those could be manipulated, right, does that now make it something in court that I'm not, I mean, how do I trust it? How do I know that that's actual evidence that it wasn't manipulated by somebody?
Well, that's where something like this standard that is actually started by Adobe would help that. And that may be the way, you know, if something's admissible in court, it has to abide by this standard, right? If it's evidence photos at a crime scene, right, it has to abide by this standard. Because like you're right, any crime scene photo can be manipulated. Now, people are taking, you know, an oath in court that they're not manipulating, you know, that this is what I saw and all that. But, you know, sometimes people lie on the stand. I know.
Shocking. No, but it really does, you know, beg us to look at, you know, how could that, you know, how are we going to manage that, right? As you know, just like when people said, hey, we can create PDFs, and then you know, a year or two later, now we have PDF breaker, right? I mean, right. I've seen people break PDFs all the time. You know, legal document. Yep. I got back into a country once because I needed to break a COVID letter. And I don't know, somebody helped me do something. And it was just I couldn't get in time. And, you know, someone had to go do some work on something. And, you know, that's the stuff that I can see us having, you know, difficulty, you know, as, you know, every staying a step ahead of the criminals as they're out there.
Yeah. And that's, again, that's another thing for law enforcement. And there's always a question of whether, you know, the federal government is as savvy. Yeah, well, I should say that. I should probably the FBI and the Secret Service, you know, who controls, you know, counterfeiting, you know, that's what Secret Service does, among other things. I think they're probably technically aware, but I don't think our legislative process has caught up to that, right? I mean, it wasn't too long ago where we had a legislator on the floor talking about the internet being a series of tubes and the tubes get clogged up, remember? That wasn't that long ago because, you know, and that's a whole nother political issue. But you're right in terms of, you know, trusting what you see, because everyone can be a content creator now, right? I mean, that's really the challenge of a lot of what's happening in the industry is, you know, the authority of journalism has been, now some people say it's been democratized. I say it's been diversified, right? In the sense that, you know, anybody with a phone can be on a news scene creating, and that's where a lot of things, you know, the whole George Floyd thing came from an amateur camera.
That's right.
So, and there's definitely value there, but But again, how are you going to verify that? Because in a lot of cases, there's no context. There's no, you didn't see what happened before. You didn't see what happened after. And, you know, there, people are not abiding by journalistic standards by any means. But that whole idea that, you know, anybody can report things and have an audience, you know, just, I mean, just think about it. You know, 10 years ago, you and I couldn't be doing this, right?
No,
or 15 years ago.
I had we were doing this TV show called Family Style, where I took my family around the world doing this big adventure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it didn't start off as a TV show. It started off as me just having this goal. I turned 50. I said, look, I got sober. I didn't want to be sober and be boring. I wanted to really create an adventure out of life. And I said, I'm going to go around the world. And we kind of planned this. I decided to take my kids with me and my wife and her mother and my mother. And we took all of our family members and we planned this trip, and then we thought, all right, that's kind of good that we could plan it. But then it felt empty, and we decided, oh, we're going to put a little bit of a, somewhere we'd do some charity work, right? Where we actually on vacation would go do something good for the communities we were in, not because you know we were trying to be something, you know, but we thought it would add a little bit of something good to the experience, right? Sure. Reaching over because we could travel, we had all this great gifts of the world. What can we do? And we sort of planned that. And my brother-in-law has a friend, Jim Jerome. Jim is a great Midwestern guy, right? He's worked on a bunch of different TV shows. He gives me a call one day and he goes, look, I am so tired of Hollywood. He works out in Hollywood, right? He works on really big shows, these big series. I mean, you guys have heard some of the big ones he does. And he does a lot of great work out there. And he goes, look, I'm just tired of Hollywood. He goes, look, it's nonsense. The whole Hollywood thing is nonsense. He goes, I move 13 trucks a day. Every day I got to move these 13 trucks. And they're, you know, and one guy may just take out one reflector, right? He may hold up a reflector for less than 20 minutes of the whole day. And I had to pay for that whole truck and that guy to be there for the entire day. It's nonsense. He goes, I want to show Hollywood that we can film a TV show using handheld equipment. And we did, we filmed the show. We got 11 series. We got 100% of it was done on GoPro cameras. Right. You know, they were done on iPhones and the picture quality is second to nothing. I mean, it is beautiful work. The 4K pictures, just the resolution's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It made it so much easier to travel. It was 18 of us. Right. Plus we had five crew members, right? We had a producer and an editor and a sound person and videographers and stuff. It made it dramatically different. And my judgment is it's going to transition, you know, these gifts are going to transition to where it equalizes the playing field for all of us, right? Where we can all do some really high end, really cool stuff, you know, with technology is going to help equalize that field.
Sure. And that's the other thing is two things are happening. Obviously, YouTube and all those things have made the platform available, right? And the technology is available, you know, for less than $1,000, you can produce something very similar to TV quality, right? The key thing, if you want to do this, is get a good sound system. Don't just rely on the camera. Make sure you get mic'd up. Little tip there. But the other thing that's going to happen is, on the back end, since we're talking about AI, that's going to make up for a lot of the deficiencies that people may have on the creative side. So, for example, your friend, you know, he's creating a show and there's going to be editing involved.
That's right.
Well, now there's AI editing where you shoot some content and you say, I want to make this a travel episode of 20 minutes. Here's the clips. Create the show. And that will happen. And it may not happen on higher end things like Travel Channel things, HGTV, but it's certainly going to happen on a local TV level. It's certainly going to happen for independents who are trying to create great content. And that's really where I think, you know, yes, we can talk about generative AI is, you know, creating the person on the screen, but also in the back end where it's taking the knowledge of people who, you know, basically taking the knowledge of what editing techniques are prevalent and what editing techniques our work and what people expect to see, and you just drop it in. And there's already some of that, right? I mean, you mentioned GoPro. They've got automatic, you know, action film creating workflows in their own software on the phone, right? You transfer to your GoPro and it'll do that. Now, it's not going to make a full TV show, but for most people aren't making a full TV show, but that's certainly going to happen.
No, it's amazing how it's changed the whole post-production, right?
Right,
you
know, exactly.
The backside of most TV shows takes as much as the front side, or actually even the show itself. You go to post-production, and now you forgot a scene, you forgot a sentence, you forgot something, and you need to go edit it in to really make the scene happen. Now you got to go back out and reshoot, the cost to go back out there, move the crew, get the camera guys, and then be able to do all that. Now you can do all this stuff with digital editing and AI editing. The where this goes and how it starts to level the playing field for all those young, excited, entrepreneurs that were out there trying to be film creators, right? This is all going to dramatically change. I think it's amazing to talk through all of the exciting changes. You've watched a lot of stuff happen throughout your career, right? I mean, you started with social media. You've really watched this transference of technology. We're always getting a little scared when we have this transference of technology. There's always kind of a spot where I get a little nervous, but it always does seem that on the other side, once we get through the fear, right, there's also a huge gift with it.
Oh, certainly. And that's, the reality is there's always people who don't want change, whether it's technological change or cultural change or whatever. And usually in technology, it usually comes with technology change, right? And so what happened in photography was, there used to be the photographer with a capital P was the person who was responsible for kind of documenting either your portraits. I'm talking like early 20th century, right? And then George Eastman came and he basically made photography popular and then accelerated for years and years. But it was still basically the film platform, right? The film platform, which was basically, as you mentioned before, a chemical process that, produced crazy quality at an affordable price for the mass market, right? And so in the 60s and 70s, it exploded. And because of that, there was a whole explosion of creative opportunities, right? You had, think about independent filmmaking kind of started in that period. A lot of underground journalism was happening. A lot of things were happening on that because the chemical platform was able to be extended and made available to everybody. And then digital came along. And then when digital came along, it just basically took the film model and digitized it, right? Where you have a capture device and it instead of a film plane, it's using a sensor and there's still a lens and all these things, but it's basically a film camera with a digital sensor instead. And so that's right. sort of the end of the current market. Now we're getting into the point where you don't even need that model anymore. And that's where I think it's going to create a whole new opportunity for people that I don't even know what that is. Because no one ever expects, no one really knows, right? That's one of the neat things about these marketplaces, that there's winners and there's losers. A lot of people thought certain companies were going to be winners in the chemical to digital transition. It certainly didn't pan out that way, as some people expected. And currently the people who are the digital winners now probably aren't going to be the AI winners, right? So we're just have to wait and see how it happens.
Well, I think it always behooves you to stay on your nimble, stay on your toes. I think we've learned from the past is that those who hung on too tight to the way things were, become, really difficult to change. As we can wear life a little bit like a loose garment, kind of go with the flow that's happening, right? If we can kind of flow with it, there's our opportunity. It's in that spot where I get scared, I hike my heels in, and that's it. I can't get, I'm not willing to change. And all of a sudden, you're stuck and you're outdated. And now they've passed you by. And ultimately what you were afraid of is what became. You really kind of created that future. So Gary, I love when you talk about this technology. Look, if people want to get involved and have you come in and talk to them or help them through this transition, with all your great insight, how do they catch up with you?
Sure. Well, obviously you can find me at LinkedIn at Gary Peugeot. Also, there's my newsletter, which is the Dead Pixel Society. If you want to check that out, that's kind of where I keep the photo imaging industry current on all these developments. It's a weekly newsletter. It's free to subscribe. So, please check that out. And we've, of course, got our own podcast too. So people can check that out. It's again, it's the Dead Pixel Society.
So it's the Dead Pixel Society podcast, right? Yep. And those are available where?
Everywhere. Basically Spotify, everywhere good podcasts are sold.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Gary, I got to say, I loved having the podcast. It was a lot of fun talking about stuff. Audience, as always, if you could take a second and like and subscribe and any comments, I'll make sure Gary gets them. Anything that you want to put out there, your experience with what's happening with the transition, you know, what you guys, how you guys are using the new technology to benefit you. I'd love to hear more and more about that down below. Really, really dive in and let me hear from you guys. I love hearing your feedback. So as always, Gary, thank you for being on the show. And audience, thanks for listening. Please like and subscribe. It means the world to our crew in the background. And as always, thanks for listening.